Welcome back to another MMA Vivisection. I'm joined this time by esteemed Bloody Elbow moderator, legend of the hammer wielding crew, Dio. He's joined me to talk about Invicta FC 11. Normally I'd be joined by Victor Rodriguez as well, but he heard about that recent secret metamorphosis. No, I already used that for Tom. He's been deported. Vic's been deported, and so he can't be on the show anymore. And
with him, it probably has something to do with just deviant acts. So
yeah, I'd assume that, you know, it's not like he's been deported because he's an illegal alien. I don't want to give people that impression. It's more like he's been deported because we don't want people like him in this country. He's just a weird dude.
Yeah. If you see our Twitter conversations, you know exactly what we're talking about.
So I'm just joined by Dio today. We're looking over Invicta FC 11 this week. And we're going to talk a little bit just about where Invicta is, too, because as part of we're changing things up a little. We're not going to be looking at the full undercard this time around because, frankly, Invicta's kind of, you know, we're seeing more and more of them shifting gears. And this card, to emphasize that, is full of new faces, people that we've never seen on any kind of major promotion whatsoever. We've never seen them in Invicta. We've never seen them in, like, Bellator or World Series of Fighting or anywhere. These women are just they're totally unknown. Many of them even to us. And so we're not going to be going through a lot of the undercard. And, you know, this is just kind of the new reality of Invicta. We saw some of this at Invicta FC 10, but really a lot more so here with this card, more than ever before. But we should take a look back at Invicta FC 10 real quick, because I don't know if a lot happened, but there was one major change that card brought about that's kind of, you know, it's a big landscape shift for women's MMA that Michelle Watterson lost.
Yeah, which, and I have a lot of crow to eat off of that one, because Erica Tabertio has never fought like that before. She's always been very bull rushish-like, but she went out there and put a beating on Michelle Watterson. Like, you know, Watterson held her own, but between her having just being in insane mode, and I guess that cutoff shirt might have had something to do with the win too, but, you know, but yeah, that was between that one and then Roxanne Modafferi actually going out there and proving that she's actually a very capable striker. Like, before it was like, oh, she looked good in her last fight because, you know, but she looked good for Roxy. But this time I was like, wait a minute. She actually went out there and went toe-to-toe with a, you know, kickboxing champion and outstruck her and then, you know, beat her on the ground. Like, it was that was something. So,
yeah, no, Montferri's her performance was amazingly exceptional. I mean, she, you know, she exposed that Lee has a lot of holes in her game in that she's and it was one of those weird fights where you're watching, you're like, Lee is insanely more athletic here. Like, she, everything she lands is way harder. Every time she moves, it's way faster. She looks more fluid. She looks more natural. But she just didn't have the tools or the veteran savvy or the consistency of application to actually go out there and win even for 5 minutes just to take rounds. Modafferi was just staying in her face, staying on her, staying consistent, making sure she threw all her counters, getting in, making sure she finished her takedowns. And, you know, it was a great performance and a great fight from her. So,
wonder what would have happened had Roxy moved back to the United States 5 years ago. Like, she could be up there, you know, in the top 10, top 5, you know, if she stayed up at 135. But, yeah, like, it's just vastly untapped talent that she just did not have. the keys to.
Yeah, I mean, it may be, too, that just, like, the move down to flyweight really helps her and makes it feel more natural. So who knows, you know, maybe no matter what, that opportunity wouldn't have ever quite been the right opportunity. But it's certainly nice to see her finding success now in Invicta. I think, you know, she's one of those fighters you really want to see find that kind of success.
Definitely.
So that's kind of the big points to cover from the point of, you know, just glossing over the last card. But one of the other big things I noticed recently, I got the Invicta FC 11 press release, and what I saw this week, and I don't know if you've seen this, was the UFC sort of media schedule email that they send out every week, every event. That has all of the, like, here's what we're doing this week, and here's our plan for the week.
Right.
Here's, you know, media days at this time, at this day, on this time, and weigh-ins on this day, at this time, and all that. And to lead it off was the Invicta FC media events. That was just, like, front and center for the UFC's media schedule this week.
And I've noticed on their channel, like on the UFC's channel on YouTube, because beforehand, like, they'd only do this like the day before, maybe a few hours before the weigh-ins are going to happen, they'll schedule it. But they're scheduling stuff way in advance now, and which before was only something that you got on big UFC cards or any UFC card, really. So this is you can tell that they are really, you know, they're putting more of a push on this.
They've invested in Invicta. It appears like they've invested in Invicta in a way that goes beyond just putting them on Fight Pass, but that they're really, you know, they're marketing Invicta as almost a Zuffa product. I mean, they're saying, here is the lineup of Invicta, of UFC events this week, and included in that is Invicta.
Right.
Like, we're setting you right up that you should know that one of the UFC products you should be looking for this week is Invicta. And that's a pretty big deal.
Yes.
That then becomes kind of a weird note to, like, jump in and be like, yeah, UFC product, Invicta FC 11, we're going to be skipping the first half of it because there's not much on it that you're going to care about.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Being that the cards are happening so much faster than they were before. Because in the previous years, we would get 3 Invictas a year, if we were lucky, and they were spaced out by, like, 3 or 4 months. And now, like the turnaround time between these have been, what, a month or just over 2 months or so?
So it's 2 months, but, you know, it was 1 month between 9 and 10, and... Perfect. So it's between 1 and 2 months is about, like, their normal schedule right now.
Right. So this is definitely and as that happens, we're going to get more of these cards where they're going to be weaker at the bottom. And I can't really even say weaker at the bottom because Invicta's not really, like, even though they are the biggest, you know, all women's organization, it's still, you know, there's a dearth of talent out there. So you're going to have the people at the top that are going to be on the main card, and you're going to have the prospects at the bottom, because realistically, Invicta is a feeder league into the UFC.
I mean, you look at Invicta FC1, and, you know, you're talking, like, Sarah Malloy, Michelle Gutierrez, Sophia Bagardai, Megan Wright. I mean, the bottom of that card wasn't any, like, more stacked than the bottom of this card.
Right.
It's really just more like, you know, suddenly in Invicta FC2, you see Raquel Pennington, Nick Dolly, Rivera Kalanick, Jessamine Duke, Liz McCart. Like, you're starting to see more, you saw a period when the undercard, especially, like, Invictas 2 and 3 and 4, those cards were just huge and stacked. I mean, right. Miriam Nakamoto fought on the undercard of Invicta FC5, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the, you know, what we're moving away from in the new reality is that that span where Invicta was putting on these huge stacked cards where the undercard was packed and the main card was packed. That's not really happening anymore.
Yeah.
The main card of this is still solid, but you know, it's an 8-fight card and the undercard and half of it's people we don't know.
Yeah. Or there's not just don't know, but there's no footage to even find. You know, you got peep the like the first match is somebody that's or people that are 0-0 and 0 with looks like no amateur records whatsoever. So it'll give you a sense of how things are.
Yeah, they're definitely. I mean, they're just out looking for new talent, looking for new fighters to develop, and you know, the partnership with UFC suggests even more so. Like, this is a development league. This is a place where we're trying to bring fighters in and give them fights, give them a platform to excel, so that we can pick them up and put them in our 135 and 115 divisions eventually.
Right.
So at that point, is there anybody on the undercard that you're watching out for? Anybody you recognized at all?
On the undercard, well, Jamie Moyle and J.J. Aldrich are two of the strawweight division's biggest prospects. The most, like, probably the most potential of any of the fighters below 135 pounds in Invicta. That's like probably the most important fight on the undercard. It's one of those things. They both have pretty long amateur records. They both looked really good in their Invicta debuts. But Jamie Moyle probably had a little bit better outing. She destroyed her last opponent. And
yeah. So who are you? I mean, like, you know, who are you expecting to win here? Because this isn't something, you know, you said Moyle had a better performance. What do you expect to see in this fight? Because this isn't, you know.
They both have good stand-up. Moyle just is stronger, seems to have more pop in her punches. That's a little bit more fluid on the feet. But I don't think it's going to be like the last one where she just went out there and washed her last one. But this one, it should be a pretty... I won't say even, but I see it going to a decision, but I see Moyle winning it pretty handily. Other than that, right. Christine Stanley versus Rachel Cummings was the only other thing that really stood out on the undercard, and more so because Christine Stanley has a, you know, really crazy 5-second jump spinning hook kick KO.
That was Facebook, that was some world star everything. Yeah, that was some Tekken shit going on there, I remember. And that was in, like, it was called Tomato Can MMA or something.
Basically, yeah. And the thing about with her is, like, it's not so much, like, when you go and look at her, like, who she's going against. Rachel Cummings is really tall for her weight class. Like, really tall. She's 5'9", really rangy. Striking is not that great. Like, it's very much that striking that you see in a lot of the lower level WMMA where they rush forward, you know, basically it's just punches just to get into a clinch, into a takedown. Mainly because she has really good, you know, pretty decent, I should say, jiu-jitsu. And Christine Stanley, I won't say that she has good stand-up, because I think a lot of people tend to mistake doing cool shit for good stand-up. Like, her last fight that she won was just against, it just looked like some lady that they got off the street, you know, had an oversized t-shirt on, you know, it was a few kicks to the leg and the fight was over. And just within that, like, she spammed spinning kicks and spinning hook kicks and leg kicks, and there was nothing that was really set up. So it'll at least be
something fun to watch.
Oh yeah, there's gonna be some fun. There will be plenty of gifs that come from this one, probably.
All right. So that unfortunately really like sums up the undercard is in terms of our interest. There are some other fighters, you know, there are a lot of new faces. Anna Carolina Vidal versus Aspen Ladd, Amy Montenegro versus Brianna Van Buren, but it's all show me kind of stuff. We don't really know what to expect out of that. The main card, though, let's move on to that. we've got a bantamweight matchup between a couple of names I recognize. A real hot prospect in Irene Aldana, who I believe was supposed to be on Invicta FC 10, but got sick right before the fight.
Yeah, she got bronchitis, I believe it was, right before
the fight. Yeah, and she was supposed to fight Marion Renault, who's now been tearing shit up in the UFC. So, yeah. And Irene Aldana is facing Colleen Schneider, who, if I'm not mistaken, was the former Super Fight League champion.
Yes, and I believe she just won a title in her last fight, I believe it was.
She won the Super Fight League American title as well in her last bout.
Yeah. Which is something, I guess.
Yeah. I think Brenda Gonzalez I recognize from somewhere. That's now striking a chord with me. I believe Gonzalez may have fought Rin Nakai.
She lost to Rin Nakai. It was another one of those kind of weird... I still don't know. That was one where Rin Nakai was just better in that fight. But, yeah, that was done.
All right. So, we've got Colleen Schneider, who's kind of been on that secondary women's circuit that's, you know, just below maybe some of the Pancrase, Smack Girl, World Series of Fighting, Bellator for a while, and she's now getting a step to step into Invicta against Irene Aldana. What do you expect to see here?
Irene Aldana is going to murk her. There's no two ways about it. Colleen Schneider is very much a journeywoman. You know, she's records very much up and down. It's like started off losing, got a few wins in, goes back to losing. So it's she's very kind of a wrestle-heavy type game. I believe she's training with Josh Barnett now. And in this one, Irene Aldana has too much power. Like, she is the more athletic of the two. I believe they're about the same height. Yeah, same height. But if I remember correctly, Aldana's got a reach advantage. And if you saw what she did to Peggy Morgan, it's probably going to go pretty similar to that fight.
Yeah, Aldana just seems like, you know, her game in some ways is pretty raw, but she seems like a really great athlete. And yeah. I don't know that Schneider's technically the kind of fighter that's going to take advantage of somebody that much more athletic than her.
Right. And one other thing, too, was Colleen Schneider tried out for the Ultimate Fighter and lost to Shayna Baszler to get into the house.
Which Baszler these days, you know, she's technically a good fighter, but once again, like, not a fantastic athlete.
Definitely.
So next up, too, we've got a couple of names, and like I say, I recognize everybody on this main card. Deanna Bennett versus Norma Rueda Center. Bennett is coming off a really good win to over Jennifer Maya at Invicta FC 10. Mm-hmm. Where she really did a good job putting it on Maya over three rounds. I thought that was really impressive. And Norma Rueda Center, I believe she was one of Joanne Calderwood's many victims.
It was a really weird fight where they just had really odd positions for very long periods of that fight. But yeah, she's a Jackson Wiglejohn product. And kind of see Deanna Bennett being a little bit too diverse on the feet floor. And Deanna Bennett is actually a very well-rounded, you know, fighter. She's got good submissions. She's got pretty good takedown defense from what I've seen. Her stand-up's really good. I mean, she damn near blew Michelle Olds back out with a kick to the body. Yeah, but the one thing is, this is her first time cutting down to 115 pounds. So that may be a big difference here. So,
yeah, I would worry a little, just because one of the things that I do remember about the Rueda Center Joanne Calderwood fight was that Center seemed like a really good developing wrestler for the division, just like really stayed on Calderwood, really made her work constantly, and it was obviously like a huge skill and experience disparity just that early in Rey de Senna's career, but it does make me wonder here against Bennett if that may be something that she can get a little more success with.
Right.
I think Bennett deserves to be the favorite, but it's an interesting fight. Mm-hmm. Which brings us to the co-main event. Already, like I say, short card, 8 fights. But against a couple of very hot prospects in the division, in the strawweight division, Alexa Grasso versus Mizuki Inoue. And this is Inoue bouncing back from a really surprising loss to Carolina Kowalkiewicz. And that's not because Kowalkiewicz is a bad fighter by any means. It was just so surprising to see Inoue get boxed up.
Yeah, over it was a very, very enlightening fight. We learned 2 things. Inoue is very undersized for 115. Something that we kind of knew before was she just does not have that much power in her hands. And she just lacks strength.
She also seems to get really dialed into not only looking for the perfect strike,
true,
but getting really stuck in modes. Like, she's either boxing, or she's grappling, or she's wrestling, and if she's doing one, she's not doing any of the others.
Right. And a lot of that has to do with, like, how they train. Train in Japan. There's no fluid mix of everything when they train. There's, okay, I'm going to go to boxing, then I'm going to go to wrestling, then I'm going to go to judo, then jiu-jitsu, and there's no real time to put everything together until it's fight time. So,
yeah, which makes me a little worried about her fighting Alexa Grasso, honestly, because Grasso seems like another one of these Mexican prospects that is just really athletic, you know, that really has a big athletic advantage over a lot of the competition and seems to be quickly putting together some sharp skills. I mean, I think Inoue technically is a better fighter everywhere, but, do you think that she beats Grasso?
No. Inoue has the better boxing. She's probably got, like you said, she probably has the better everything. But Grasso is very fluid in everything that she does. And she has some good pop to her punches. She put a hurting on Alita Gray in the last fight. Some would say, a few people said that it was kind of, early. But it was like, no, there was nothing early about that. Because Alita Gray was just going to get beat up a little bit more. And it was going to be over. But yeah, I don't know. Grasso's going to be bigger. She's going to have more power to it. And, I think, like, after this fight, if Inoue does not win, it's probably going to be time to cut down to atom weight. Or she's going to need to move to the United States and put on some weight if she's going to survive in this weight class.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like the big thing to me is not even necessarily that she has to go to atom weight, but she really obviously needs to spend some time at a U.S. camp where she can get, it doesn't have to be all her time, because like we say, her technical skills are all really great.
Yeah.
But she needs somebody like, at that point, and there are a lot of U.S. camps that can do it at that point, but, maybe like even like Alliance or ATT or one of those camps that's really great at helping fighters prep for fights and helping them really get all their skills together for the fight.
Right. And like even if it's just something to where she comes over 3 months before a month or so before the fight's going to start and say train at, like Jackson Winklejohn or, Ray Longo's camp or anything like that. Just somewhere that's going to help her bring everything together.
Yeah. I don't think it would take much, but it has to be something.
Right.
Because it feels weird to be kind of down on Inoue as, like, the next big thing in the division. But that Kowalkiewicz loss was kind of a wake-up call, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And one other thing I would say with this is Grasso, both Grasso and Aldana, kind of feels like the UFC has strapped rockets to their backs, because you see I've seen like posts and videos both on like Fightland and like Vice and a bunch of other ones where, you know, you don't really see that for many other, you know, fighters that are outside of the UFC. So I would not be surprised that if, you know, Aldana or Grasso, if they went on this, that next card that the UFC has in Mexico, would not be surprised if you see them on those cards if they went here.
Well, the bantamweight and the strawweight, so, like, they are primed for the UFC to pick them up, and they represent a demographic that the UFC really wants to keep and build. So,
yeah,
I definitely could see this being their last fights under Invicta with if they win. That brings us to the main event, which is Christine Justino, Cyborg, versus Charmaine Tweet. And is there any way that Tweet just does not represent the latest in a long line of combat victims?
Nope. she is a lamb to the slaughter. I believe she's probably going to be, outside of Jarena Bars that she fought in Lion Fight, I think Tweet's going to be the tallest fighter that she's fought so far. In MMA, she definitely is. But Tweet is not an athlete. There is nothing about Tweet that is athletic. She has a Muay Thai background. She's got pretty decent jiu-jitsu. But there are very few fighters that are going to be able to handle that rush that is, you know, Cyborg Justino. So,
well, and the thing you see so often in Cyborg fights is that somebody will land a couple punches here and there. They might do all right for a minute or two. And then Cyborg will just, like, cock her right hand and come back with a straight right down the pipe that just demolishes.
Yeah.
And you saw it in the Conan fight and in the Muxlow fight. And, like, you know, it would be like Conan would be doing all right and kind of, like, hitting her knees in the clinch and doing some Muay Thai, and it was just like, oh yeah, she's going after it, and then she'd just get bombed.
Yeah, that almighty equalizer.
Yeah, and it's hard not to see, I mean, it's hard not to see Tweet in that same situation, because, you know, she really is a fighter who wants to, like, box in the pocket or try and rough you up and take you down and bully you and all that, you know, and I don't, you know, the chances of her being able to bully Cyborg just seem
pretty slow,
infinitesimal.
Yeah, like, Tweet's been able to bully, the only time that she's really been able to bully fighters are fighters that are far less experienced than her. Best case, or, you know, best example of this was when she fought Veronica Rothenhauser, who was, like, hailed as the next, you know, big thing, when in actuality, she had no fundamentals. She, you know, just had that big right hand, and that was about it. And Tweet beat her down pretty badly. But I don't see, save for some miracle or, you know, a light falls from, you know, the ceiling and hits Cyborg. Even then, I don't even know if she can win the fight. So it's a very...
Yeah, and it's one of the things people kind of forget about Cyborg as well, is that, well, and at this point, you know, we actually are starting to get to the point. It's been a while. It's been an amazingly long time since we've seen Cyborg fight, actually. That's kind of the remarkable thing that even I'd forgotten.
Yeah. And you would think, she just fought in Invicta recently. And it's like, no, Cyborg has not fought in a long time. She hasn't fought since 2013.
Yeah, I don't see Tweet beating Cyborg, but I was about to say that I don't think, you know, Cyborg hasn't been fighting for as long as people think she has, but she actually has been fighting for close to 10, we're coming up on 10 years now.
Yeah.
But she's had 2 years off, which I actually think is maybe not the worst idea for somebody, you know, in her position, where, like, she's at the point where she's been around long enough that she might as well be, you know, not doing a lot of stay busy fights. Like, right. It's not like she needs the experience. So, it'll be interesting to see her come back. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see her come back. I don't expect Tweet to be a big challenge, but it will be interesting to see if Ring Rust is any kind of factor at all.
Right. Especially since she's coming off of the injury, too. So
yeah. So that's kind of an interesting... It's an interesting subtext to a fight that's otherwise maybe not the most interesting fight in the world.
Yeah.
Beyond that, you know, so that's... And that's the Invicta card. It's 8 fights, like I say. It's not the biggest deal in the world. It's interesting. I think it's... The main card is fun and worth a watch, and there's a lot of unknown talent on the undercard that could be worth showing up for, looking for those surprise performances. Obviously, J.J. Aldrich versus Jamie Moyle should be an interesting fight. Somebody should come out of that with a little more promotional steam. But, it's just... They'll be going up against Bellator, the big British Invasion card. Both cards are going to be worth something to watch. We'll be doing a breakdown, Dallas and I, on the Bellator card. So, This is definitely, I don't know, it's a lesser, but especially with the Cyborg name on it, it's a card that I have to pay attention to.
Right. Actually, you know, one other thing to add, and I remember I was talking to Vic about this the other day, and he mentioned this, that Cyborg actually brought in, I believe it was the same guy that we had on Bloody Elbow, who was like the anti-Mike Dolce nutritionist. Mm. So, could be interesting. We might actually see a Cyborg that weighs in lighter than she ever has before, which could be an interesting development in the ongoing, I guess you'd say, women's MMA version of Floyd Mayweather versus Pacquiao of Ronda Rousey versus
Cyborg. Yeah, there you go. That we may be seeing something closer to that, because I do know that it sounds like Cyborg's got a new deal that if she hasn't finished, that is in the works to be an Invicta and UFC fighter,
right,
where they're just waiting for the right chance to make a potential, I think, catchweight bout between Rousey and Cyborg.
Right. Which, even then, I still don't get the logic, because I know people have been arguing, make it a catchweight. There's no point in it being a catchweight fight. There's, after...
At some point, who's Rousey going to fight, though? I mean, at some
very
point...
Very true. Very true.
They want to cash in on that while they can, and I think we've gotten to the point with Cyborg where she's just never going to fight at 135 pounds. So if we're going to cash in on that, it's got to be at 140.
On that
note, I think we're done though. I think we've wrapped up everything we had to say about this card. We've probably even said more than we needed to. But yeah. Thanks for joining me for this, and you can find Dio over in the Bloody Elbow comment section, dropping the hammer like a madman. That's right. Putting the hammer down.
All these mad tweets and ridiculously hilarious emails that we get after banning people. Like,
that's right.
I wish we could show you guys some of that stuff. It is amazing.
It is. And of course, if you want to send your own horrible tweets to Dio, you can find him over on Twitter at I'm Just Dio, right?
Yep, that's me.
And you can find me over on Twitter at TheZaneSimon. Find me at Bloody Elbow. Watch out for all our other video content. Give this video a like if you're watching it on YouTube. And subscribe to MMANation.com. Thanks, everybody.